Money in the bank.
Hey Brett, how are you today?
Hey Ange, good, how are you?
Good. Have I ever told you about my friend Bob?
Bob? Who's Bob? You never mention a Bob.
So Bob is, he's my old friend, and he's the world's worst market timer.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, so he was, you know, somebody who, he was really nervous to start invest money. So, you know, he's pretty old. He's like my dad's friend, actually. But he saved up $6,000 before he invested for the first time. And then he went ahead and invested in December of 1972. And maybe that doesn't mean a lot to you, but right after that, the market tanked. And my poor friend Bob was like, I'm just gonna wait. So he kept saving money. And then in August of 1987, he had saved up $40,000 that he put into the market.
Oh, doing a good job, Bob. All right.
I probably don't need to tell you, but by waiting 13 years, well, he just happened to hit the market right when it tanked again. So Bob was very determined at this point to not make the same mistake again. So he was just going to wait until the market went up really high, and then he was going to invest money after it went up, because he was like, that way, you know, surely it won't be a mistake this time around. So he saved up, I think he said $40,000 in that ballpark. And he put it in, and he put it in 1999. Well, now you might kind of know what's coming, right? Because that was a good internet bubble. So he lost like half of it again. So then he did this one more time. He was going to give it one more shot, right? And so he saved up another $60,000 and he put it in 2007. But the other good thing about Bob was, while he kept putting money in at these really bad times, he also never took anything out. So to this day, he actually still has money in there. In case you weren't adding it all, he put a total of $180,000 in. So how much do you think he has in his account right now?
$180,000, and he lost every time he invested it, so.
And he lost almost half every time he invested it.
Right away.
Market dropped in half.
I don't know. Maybe if he just left it in there over time, maybe he's got like a couple hundred thousand.
All right, so he started with 180. What's your guess?
Like 350?
350. He has $1.1 million.
Wow. Just so, from being the worst investor he could possibly be.
From being, because he made one, although he made a lot of mistakes, he had one saving area, and that was that he left his money in there. So he never took anything out. So it's far better to invest high, and even if you invest high and then the market drops, if you leave it in, history shows that it'll eventually recover. He actually earned 7.3% on his money, on average, which is crazy because he is the worst. So if you're not the worst, then maybe you could get 10%, right? Like, if you just dollar cost average.
Right.
And another question I've gotten is, if you have $10,000, what's the best thing to do with it if you want to invest $10,000?
Give it to me.
No. Put it all in right now, because even as Bob shows, putting lump sums of money in, although in his case it would have been better to dollar cost average, you're still likely not going to lose money. So that's just, you know, that's not actually a true story. I wish I had a friend Bob who liked to talk to me about investments, but I don't. But it is a good example. That is, while it's not a true life person, it is based on real numbers. So all of those times the market would have dropped by 50%, but you still would end up with $1.1 million. So, you know, I just thought that was a good intro, because we were going to talk about 401k investing today. And I think, you know, as we talk about it, a lot of people like investments, and I kind of want to talk about what the best choice is. So we'll just kind of start off with, when did you get a 401k and how did you decide what to put your money in?
So I got my first 401k with my company in 2010. So I've had it about 7 years now, and couldn't tell you what the funds are that I'm allocated to.
So you just threw a dart and picked some.
Or picked one of the prepackaged things that they had on the site. Yeah, because it was just like, here's a link. You know, it was when we were being onboarded, and It was like, here's a million things to do. One of them is like, here's your link to Fidelity to go, you know, to that website and set up your 401k stuff. And I was just like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just going to click through this and set up whatever I need to.
Yeah. Well, no, so I think that's common. But I do want to mention, it is a good idea to at least get on annually and rebalance. So, but I guess to rebalance, we should start at the beginning. How do you pick funds? And really, you know, there's going to be a lot of people out there that have a lot more technical advice than me, but I'm the Average Joe podcast. So this is just advice that you can digest really easily without all these crazy graphs and lingo that you've never heard of. So my basic advice is to diversify. Easy enough, right? So what does that really mean? Well, it means that you shouldn't just pick only US-based funds. You should get some international exposure in there. Doesn't have to be a lot, maybe 10 to 15 to 20% international exposure, just so that not all of your eggs are in one basket, right?
And so there's just an option on there for just international funds?
Yep. So my 401k, I think, has 17 or so funds that I can choose from, and I think I'm currently in maybe 5 to 7 of them. And one of them just says, you know, international index fund or something like that. So that's something I kind of add to my portfolio. And then there's usually, you know, other options on there. So there's different stock or mutual fund options. And between that, it's small, medium, or large cap, which, you know, some of this lingo, you might not exactly know what that means, but that's basically just how they group different companies. So I recommend choosing, you know, again, just getting an exposure of small, medium, and large cap, right? Now, depending on your company and which funds you have where might kind of change what percentage you allocate. And that also depends on your age. So, you know, for me, I'm still in my 20s and I am really aggressive with my investments and I am not emotional about it. So I tend to lean more towards like 90-95% stocks and then I do 5-10% in a fixed account.
Because following the rules of Bob, right, if you put it in early on, you're still going to make money over time, even if the market goes up or down. Like, it doesn't, you don't even need to look at the market because it doesn't matter what it does. You're still going to put in the same amount.
Right, right. So that's why I keep most of mine in stocks, and then I just do a little bit in the safer amount, which that's just, like, feel-good money.
Right, and when you say stocks, it's not like you, in the account, it's you know, doing individual company stocks or investing in the stock that you're working for, right? If you work for a company, publicly traded company, you're just saying you're investing in that market fund that is part of it, right?
Correct. So, yeah, when I say small cap, medium cap, or large cap, that's just different groupings of companies that you invest in. So it's still mutual funds that we've been talking about. It's just how they group them, you know, based on their size and stuff. So definitely still, you know, different funds. So how, I guess, you know, the kind of the last big thing I want to cover, you know, we talked about diversifying through international funds and then diversifying through small, medium, and large cap. And then we talked about you can put some money in a fixed fund. Have you ever heard the term expense ratio?
Yes.
So what does it mean?
The amount of money that you have compared to your expenses.
That is probably like an accounting term. And the way I'm using it for investments, it's the percentage that the servicer, whether it's Vanguard or Fidelity, will retain for creating that fund.
So it's a fee.
It's a fee.
Okay.
Yep. So, you know, how you said you might have been in a prepackaged fund, those are going to typically have the highest expense ratios because they're actively managed. Where if you do a passively managed indexed fund, like they have one for the S&P 500, they will have very low expense ratios. So Vanguard is known for their low expense ratios of 0.1% or so, which when you compare that to 1% compounded over a bunch of years, you know, you can really make a lot of extra money that way.
So the actively managed funds are the guys down on, you know, the on Wall Street holding up the tickets and the on the showroom floor trying to yell at each other and sell, buy, and trade and all that kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's managed funds. So that's what you're paying for them to go down onto the floor and yell at each other.
Sure.
I'm sure it's all done with computers nowadays, but the passively managed funds is you're just following along with the market, right? Whether the market itself, the whole index, whether it's Dow Jones or S&P, whatever, you're just looking at that trend line going up or down, and that's going to dictate your funds, right?
Exactly. And, you know, some people like the passively managed ones because it's all done for you. So, you know, where I was talking a little bit earlier about how I am pretty aggressive and I do 90 to 95% in stocks and the rest in bonds right now, these funds will shift it for you over time. So maybe when you get to your 40s, they'll make you more 80-20. And then when you're closer to retirement age, they'll move you more to 60-40. Now, that surprises some people because some people think in retirement they should cash everything out of their funds. But it's actually only recommended that you cash out enough for 3-ish years of your expenses into a fixed safe account. And the rest should stay in the market because, you know, in a lot of fixed accounts right now, you won't even beat inflation. So it's okay to keep some of your money in the market. And what that is kind of a personal preference. You know, some people might go more 50-50 or 40-60 instead of 60-40. But it is advised to keep some money kind of in mutual funds growing.
Right, because you're not going to need, you know, ideally you've planned and saved and there's a ton of money in that account, right? You're not going to need all of that next year.
Yeah.
You're not going to spend it all. So if you're not going to spend it in almost 10 years or more, right? So if you're not going to need it for 10 years, leave the amount that you need in there, let it work the cycles, but move it into a safer, rebalance the portfolio to be safer.
Yep.
And so if the market tanks, you're still not going to take a very big hit.
Immediate money.
Yeah, compared to what you're going to gain off of
it. Because every time the market's tanked, I think in a period of 5 to 7 years after that, it's been well recovered and then some, mm-hmm. right? Another example, just to illustrate with dollar amounts, you know, let's say your expenses are about $40,000 a year. Well, they recommend a safe withdrawal rate of 4%, which means you have a lump sum of $1 million. Well, it would be silly for you to take $1 million and plop it in your bank account. I can tell you a few reasons why. You're only federally insured up to $250,000 anyways. So if there's another Great Depression and the stock markets tank, so does your bank account. a lot of people kind of forget that. I think they think the bank is so safe, and it's like, well, it's actually only safe up to $250,000. So if you're talking about catastrophic Great Depression type cycle happening again, it might not even be safe there. Nothing is safe, right?
Yeah, it's more likely. I don't know if that's as likely as the bank account records are just going to get deleted by some hacker at some point in the next 20 years, but
that's probably true too. But moving on. So, you know, if you have $1 million, you need $40,000 a year to cover your expenses. Let's say you have a crazy year and you spend $100,000. Certainly, even if you had, you know, $300,000 in safe money, that's $700,000 that you could be investing in some other way, right? So that's, I think, where some people kind of forget that they still need to allow this money to continue to work for them, right? Just to keep up with inflation and make sure you're covered for your entire life. You know, that's important. But, okay, so to kind of backtrack, you know, we've talked about rebalancing a lot, and I just want to specify that a little bit more. So, basically, you create this perfect, you know, allocation of all of your money, but then you start putting it in, and 1 year later, because the market's moved in different ways, you might log on and be like, oh my goodness, I wanted to be 90% stocks and 10% bonds, but because my stocks have grown so much, I'm 97% stocks and 3% bonds. So rebalancing just goes in and kind of moves the money back around the way that you want to smooth out kind of any volatility that's happened that year.
So I think the other thing that I don't want to forget about is you also want to make sure when you're setting this up, like what I did, is you need to figure out what your company is going to match you. And definitely always at least do that.
That is free money. And I'm glad you brought it up because In my financial brain, I forgot that there's people out there that don't do that.
I have coworkers that I think we have a 6% match at our company, and I have coworkers that like aren't even hitting that number, and I'm just like, why?
So
what do you need that money so bad for that you're willing to give up twice that much money?
Run, don't walk to your computer right now and change it, because that is mind-blowing to me. And I get that maybe it's hard to take a 6% reduction off the top, but start with 1% then and ratchet it up until you at least get to your employer match. But I'm glad you brought up this point. You know, what should you be saving for retirement? And I say if you're out of college, you should be aiming for 10 to 15%, and that can include the employer match. So if your employer is matching 6%, and you put in 6%, you're at 12%, which is in that good range. But then if you could do 9% and they're doing 6%, that's even better. You know, I'll never tell you to save less. You know, I think another important thing is if, you know, I've talked to some people. I guess I'm in like a much nerdier circle than you, because everybody I know is getting their match. But I've talked to some people who they want to be able to max out their 401k benefit. So you mm-hmm. can contribute $18,000 a year in that account before you get shut off. And, you know, I have people that I know that are striving to do that, to max out their retirement amount. So I say, you know, the more you can do, the better. Do as much as you can.
Right. And that's, I mean, you can't do that forever, right? You're not going to do that for your entire career necessarily, to get put in $18,000 a year into that, because otherwise that fund will be, by the time you retire, like super flooded with cash, right?
Right.
And to the point where there's going to be withdrawal penalties, or you're not going to be able to pull out as much as you need to, or you're in the distributions that you want, because there's just going to be too much money in that fund that you're not going to have access to until you're at the end of life, basically.
Well, right? So 65, yeah, babe, that's not end of life.
Yeah, but you're going to want some of that money in your career to be in the midterm, right? You need to get to that point before, you know, if you're not going to draw any of that.
And there's different things you can do with Roth conversion ladders, but that might be a little more complex than we want to get into today. But you know, I will say, if you're looking at this right now and you're still single and you haven't started a family yet, and you have the ability to start putting more in, feel free to front load your 401k, and then, you know, later if you're like, okay, I've been putting in 15% and now I really need the money because I started a family and kids are expensive and I'm going to back it down 5%. At least you were putting extra in while you were younger and you were getting more compound interest.
Right. The earlier that you can put more money in is the secret to success, right? So if you spent the $18,000 that first year and putting it in, that'd be better than putting in, you know, the company match only for the next 25 years. Right?
Exactly.
And I'm so glad that I did that, right? I started with 15% as my baseline, because that was my recommendation from my sister when I got a job, right? Which is like, this is what I do, you know, put more in, put as much in as you can. So yeah, I picked 15% as a highball number for me, because that was more than anybody else had recommended when I looked stuff up. Right. And
it's because he hadn't met me yet.
But I mean, that it was good for me to set that bar and take that money out before I ever started getting it, you know, week one of my company, because I never missed that 15%. It was just always going to where it needed to be. And I just lived on the other 85% and could have ignored that it ever existed.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I think it was kind of interesting. I mean, I've mentioned before that my dad's a financial planner. So obviously I had heard most of this my whole life, but you never listen to your parents as much as you listen to other people. And I remember my high school math teacher telling me when I was, you know, a senior, like, this won't apply to you yet, but just so you know, someday when you have a 401k, put contributions in from day one, because if you never get it in your paycheck, you'll never miss it. And that stuck with me, and he probably doesn't even remember that he said it. But it really, like, it stuck with me. And I remember when I was like, I got my first job out of college and I was filling out the forms, and you know, his advice just came back to me. And in that moment, I was like, yep, I'm going to start putting in 12%, you know, and I wasn't as aggressive as you with 15%, but I was still paying off student loan debts and all that. So, you know, I was starting at a pretty good point and then ratcheting it up as I could.
Did something right without you.
And I guess one more thing I just want to add is all the advice I've given about diversifying and picking funds and looking at, you know, expense ratios and all of that, it doesn't just apply to 401ks. It applies to IRAs, which are very similar to 401ks, but instead of through your employer, you just pick your service provider. And then the amount that you can contribute annually is less. And then, but it also applies to taxable investment accounts, which are just regular mutual fund accounts. You know, it works for all of them. So.
Great.
All right. Do you have any other questions or comments, concerns?
Is there a point where it doesn't make sense for me to invest when I'm like getting closer to the retirement age? Should I, you know, like the week before I retire, should I continue to be putting money in that 401k?
Yes.
Okay, because that money, technically that money going in, because, right, is going to sit in there longer because yeah. I'm not taking it all out on the day I turn 65.
And, you know, I think a lot of people who retire, you probably, all, you know, it's not just your 401k. You have taxable accounts and you have, you know, personal savings, and maybe you don't even touch your 401k for a year, you know, you don't know. So, I would say for most people, just keep putting it in because it's been coming out of every paycheck. You don't need to do something special with it all of a sudden. Just, you know, sack it away. I don't think you'll ever regret having a better funded retirement, especially the America we live in today, where most people have a poorly funded retirement. You will not regret having a well-funded one.
Certainly, because, yeah, you know, for us, Social Security, who knows if that's going to be around, right? So
the actuaries say it will, and actuaries we trust.
Maybe the math does. The policies may be a different story, but...
Yeah. Well, all right. I think on that note, then, we can wrap up here. So if you, you know, have any further questions about investing or 401ks, or we missed something that you're curious about, just, you know, let me know. I'll drop my contact information in. And on the same token, you know, if there's something that we said that doesn't quite make sense to you, let me know that as well. All right. Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Money in the Bank. Make sure to subscribe to us on the iTunes or Stitcher app so that you get weekly alerts every time we post a podcast. Or if you want, you can visit my website, moneyinthebankpodcast.com. And if you want to reach out with any questions or further comments, please email me at angie@moneyinthebankpodcast.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Money in the Bank.